This week on Making Contact.
Now, the media, of course, never made the connection between our support for the North American Free Trade Agreement and this huge influx of economic refugee immigrants. However, that is the source of it. And rather than addressing the source, people seem to enjoy blaming the immigrants. That's still going on today. This has been very distressing to me, to be a citizen of a country that is fomenting so much pain on the world.
Women are gaining influence as leaders worldwide, fighting for peace, justice, the environment, and civil society. In this program, we profile Dr. Ann Aurelia Lopez, founder and director of the Center for Farmworker Families in Watsonville, California. Ann reveals a hidden world in the United States, where we'll talk with the mostly undocumented, poorly paid, forgotten people who harvest our food. Dr. Lopez has long studied and written about the hardships farmworkers face. Her book, The Farmworker's Journey, documents how U.S. agribusinesses worth hundreds of billions of dollars profit on the backs of farmworkers. We follow now as Ann Lopez leads a group of students from a nearby college on what she calls a farmworker reality tour. We begin the tour at Crystal Bay Organic Farm in Watsonville.
This is the kind of small organic production that we need if we want a sustainable world. This is a perfect example. That's why I love to bring people here, because they've done such a great idea of creating diversified crops and using sustainable methods to grow them, unlike huge agribusiness that covers acres and acres of land and are maintained with monocultures and pesticides. And the agricultural system that we have in this country that produces most of the food, I have concluded, is a systemic failure on all levels for all concerned, and I'll tell you why. Farm workers live in constant poverty. They have an average life expectancy of 49 years. That gives you an idea of what they're faced with in terms of health. The consumer, when you buy food, you don't know what's in your food. You don't know what pesticides or what genetically modified food you are eating, buyer beware. The growers, if they start growing strawberries cheaper in Taiwan than they do here, they'll start shipping them over here, and then that will put the growers here out of business. The only winners in this farming system, this economic system, are the agrochemical companies. So the system is a failed system. We need to create something new. And luckily, there are farms like this, which are an example of alternatives which are sustainable. Okay, and the reason why many of the farm workers that you'll meet today are here is because they've been run off their farms in Mexico by NAFTA. Prior to NAFTA, we had about 4.5 million undocumented people of various nationalities in the country. Today we have at least 11.5 million. They live in constant fear, they cannot organize and demand higher wages, and they live in constant poverty. And some of the living situations I have seen are an absolute disgrace. I mean, this is slavery in our own backyard. Discardable human beings. And the suffering engendered. I have studied this for 15 years, listening to the stories, the tragic stories of family separation, of families here whose relatives are dying in Mexico and they can't return and be with them, of children left behind in Mexico. This year, supposedly 60,000 children are coming in from Central America with coyotes. These are children crossing the border with people that they don't even know. I mean, it's a human rights disaster.
Farm work is often classified as unskilled labor to justify the low pay. But Ann Lopez points out there are many skills needed for harvesting crops, particularly strawberries.
What's going on now is that a farm worker who has worked several years picking strawberries is demonstrating the skill set needed to be able to pick and pack strawberries so they can go to market. It's not a matter of just yanking berries off of a vine or a plant and throwing it in a box. You have to order them in a certain way, otherwise they're not considered acceptable. He is bent over at the waist, and he stays that way up to 13 hours a day. Some farm workers tell me that at the end of the day, they actually are crawling on their knees. They're in so much pain. They get paid $1.10 for this whole box filled like this. Something needs to be done here. This is what is wrong with this equation?
Picture,
yeah.
It's not even
yeah.
Exactly.
Ann Lopez's outrage at the way farm workers are mistreated is rooted in her sense of social justice, but it also grows out of her own experience as a Latina in the United States, faced with economic and racial discrimination.
I was born in San Bernardino, California, at a time when the races were not allowed to mix, where there were anti-miscegenation laws in California. And my father is Mexican, my mother is white, and I was raised to think of myself as white. And I never felt like I fit in. In elementary school, I remember being rejected by kids. They didn't want to play with me. And I didn't know what it was about because no one in my family would talk about it. My Mexican father had a real strong sense of social justice and Mexicans, which he rarely expressed in our household because my mother's side of the family thinks very differently. They actually came from Arkansas, and my grandmother was raised by a slave named Letty. I remember just feeling completely isolated, and the way I survived was that we lived near the hills in Altadena, California, and I used to run in the hills, and I got very close to nature. I started really loving and exploring the natural world. I eventually graduated from high school, went to UC Riverside, and got a degree in biology, and then got a master's degree in biology as well from UC Santa Barbara. I began my PhD program in environmental studies in 1997, and that was 3 years after the North American Free Trade went into effect. So that was my first time going into the Mexican countryside to talk to people about how that trade pact was affecting their lives. People would tell me that the corn crop they harvested, and campesinos usually sell about half of their crop for money, used to from the government, who would subsidize their corn at higher than international market rates. They would tell me they'd take their corn and to the government outposts, and they would only get half of what they got the year before. And I thought to myself, how would I feel if I was in a job and I was told by my employer I can work full time, but I'm only going to get half my salary? So people became frantic. They didn't really know what to do. I asked them, do you know why this is happening? No, the most common response is it's a problem with the government. In the past, the border at Mexico, the government maintained tariffs at the border, and that protected these small producer and subsistence farmers who only have between 4 and 5 hectares of land, small plots that can support their family and make a little income. The whole idea of free trade is to get rid of the tariffs. And the government of Mexico recognized that corn is a very important crop in Mexico since it sustains most of the population. So they gave a 15-year phase-out period to reduce the tariffs over 15 years. In fact, all of those tariffs were abandoned within 30 months. So corn from the U.S. began being dumped into the Mexican countryside almost immediately.
And campesinos had lost half their income. There's massive disorganization in the countryside. What do we do? And in 1992, essentially Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution was thrown out, and all of the communal ejido lands, which had been governed more or less democratically since the 1910 revolution was over, were all privatized. So privatization was the prelude to NAFTA, and that happened in 1992, and NAFTA went into effect in 1994, consistent with the Chiapas uprising. Prior to NAFTA going into effect, the president of Mexico, Salinas de Gortari, estimated that 1 million subsistence and small producer farmers in Mexico would leave their land every year for the first 15 years of NAFTA. Now, where did he expect them to go? It began fracturing the families, fracturing the communities. And so what you see then is mainly the fracturing of relationships, the depersonalization. I remember hearing about the village of Huacao. It had, 20,000 people in it. And after, I think, 5 to 10 years of NAFTA, there were only 2,000 left. And they're very depressed. You walk along in the villages and look in windows and see women that are just literally grief-stricken. And then the women who have no livelihood, no education, what are they supposed to do?
Millions of Mexican farmers have been forced off the land they love to become economic refugees of NAFTA. The great majority who immigrate to the U.S. in search of work are undocumented. They live in the shadows, in constant threat of deportation. In California's rich Central Coast, Ann Lopez and the Center for Farmworker Families work to bridge the gap between what farmworkers earn and the high cost of living. They provide a much-needed lifeline, helping with basics, school supplies, medical assistance, and even with legislative advocacy.
People I met in the farming areas would tell me about their relatives in the U.S., and so then I got to know the farm workers in Watsonville and Salinas. And after sitting in rooms with people who are very stoic on the outside, very agreeable, friendly, etc., and then starting to talk about their villages and see them dissolve into tears, hearing these stories over and over again, I mean, almost every farm worker family has this kind of reservoir of grief. I knew it was bad intuitively. I had no idea the scope of the suffering in this community, both in the United States and in Mexico. I decided I'm going to create a nonprofit, and I created the Center for Farmworker Families basically out of nothing. So the main purpose of our organization is to promote awareness about these horrible life circumstances, because I truly believe that if the American public knew a fraction of what I have seen, they would demand change. They would say this is intolerable, in the same way that they're demanding change about whether food is organic or not. There would be a groundswell demanding agricultural justice for these people. In our interest in creating public awareness about the conditions, we do farmworker reality tours starting around the 1st of May, going through the growing season. And we begin on an organic farm that has strawberries and do a strawberry demonstration. And then we hear a harrowing tale of a border crossing through the desert with babies on the back of the parents. From there, we go to the migrant camp. Everyone gets a chance to see the apartments, to hear a story of wage theft. And one woman who gives her story but doesn't go into details talks about assault in the field as well. 80% of farmworker women are sexually molested or assaulted in the fields of California. And that this is going on is just astounding to me.
Rosa de Castilla, tu engaño. Tanti anni cuor male para noi spagaras como esplorenti.
You're listening to Making Contact. Today's program was produced by the Women Rising Radio Project. Visit us online for additional features related to this topic at womenrisingradio.com. For CD copies of this program, call 800-529-5736. Women Rising Radio follows Ann Lopez as she visits Mariel, a farm worker living in overpriced, substandard housing. Mariel is raising three children on her own while working long hours in the fields.
Hola! ¿Cómo está?
Bien, bien, pásale.
Oh, gracias. She pays $1,600. She pays $1,600 rent for this place. There is no heat. So she's been sick for the last month, and she's still going out and working in sweet potatoes to try to make ends meet.
Pues es difícil el trabajo del campo porque ella ve es pesado.
It's very difficult to work in the fields because it's just so laborious. She uses the word pesado. It's like pesado meaning heavy. Very, very difficult work.
Y también se me hace pesado dejar por muchos, quizás por horas a mis hijos.
And it's very difficult to leave my children for hours and hours.
Hay ocasiones que casi no tiene uno tiempo para ellos.
There's times when I don't even have any time for my own children.
Y aparte de eso, venir a la casa a cocinar para preparar algo para ellos también.
And then after I work all day, I have to come home and prepare a meal for them. ¿Cuántas horas trabaja el día? How many hours do you work?
9 y media, 10 horas.
I work 9.5 to 10 hours a day.
Depende pues el tiempo, ¿verdad? Pero sí, sí, de 9 a 10 horas son lo que más estamos trabajando.
Okay. So 9.5 to 10 hours is pretty standard.
Y por ejemplo, si está haciendo mucho calor, a ellos no les importa. Ellos quieren que nosotros saquemos el trabajo.
And if it's really hot in the fields, the foreman really doesn't care that we're hot and so uncomfortable. They just want us to keep working no matter what. And I should mention that I show in my talks a pay stub for this person. And you can clearly see that they take out federal income tax, they take out state, they take out for medical, they take out Social Security. And if she works 36.5 hours, she makes $310. That's for 1 week's pay. And if you multiply that times 4, it comes out to about $1,200. And her rent here is $1,600, not including bills. She won't get any benefit from that because she's not documented. Tell us about the time you returned to the house and you had been poisoned by pesticides.
Sí, esa vez nos ocurrió también mi hijo, ¿verdad?
This happened with both my older son and myself.
Y nos tocó que andábamos con una alergia y como aquí la garganta y todo olía a como a pesticida.
We were walking around with a sore throat and the smell.
Los ojos bien llorosos.
And the smell was just so strong, and my eyes were burning, and I was tearing a lot.
Con comezón y los ojos y ganas de devolver.
I just felt like vomiting.
Pero había personas desmayados también, ¿verdad?
En otra cuadrilla sí se desmayó una persona.
In one of the other teams, there was somebody who actually fainted from the exposure to the pesticides.
Y este año que pasó, nos metieron a piscar una fruta que realmente la movía uno y de tan estaba como inflamada, no sé qué.
Okay, so this last year, We picked fruit that we couldn't sell. Esto es fresa, ¿verdad?
Sí.
We picked strawberries that wouldn't sell in the markets because it was full of mold, but they wanted us to pick it anyway so that they could make juice out of it.
Era una lástima ver la fruta como estaba y ellos querían, el patrón era lo que quería sacar dinero.
The person in charge doesn't really care whether the public drinks juice with mold or not. All he wants to do is make money.
No le importaba lo que uno estuviera sorbiendo porque respirando uno movía
and
la planta.
He doesn't care about us either because we had to inhale all of the mold spores for the entire day.
Y nosotros qué hacíamos, ni modo decir no, no entramos. Teníamos necesidad, ¿verdad? Y yo digo, tengo necesidad de trabajar, tengo que entrar a donde me metan ahí, pues allí, por ganar dinero.
The owner knows that we have to enter and do the work, even though we're against it and we're suffering from the mold spore, simply because it's the only way we can make money.
¿Como una semana y media?
We work like this, inhaling mold spores, as we cleared out this rotten fruit for juice for an entire week and a half.
Pues en ocasiones nos ha tocado, doctora, andar muy cerca de donde anda el tractor fumigando.
Many times we've had to work right next to the tractors that are spraying the pesticides while we're working.
Y uno le dice al mayordomo, pero él dice, todo está bien, no les va a pasar nada.
And the foreman always tells us, no, it's no problem, nothing is going to happen at all. I have never met a farm worker that knows what pesticide they're exposed to, and they're all exposed unless they're in organic production.
¿Tiene uno miedo? Y ahora pues ya que nos van a dar la licencia, pero ¿tiene uno miedo manejar?
One fears driving. ¿Y qué más?
¿Tiene uno miedo a pues ya
coming out?
Sí.
I'm afraid to walk. Ir de compras,
sí,
I'm afraid to go
sí.
Shopping. ¿Y el temor es por la migra o qué?
Pues veces no tanto por eso, doctora, pues todo pasa, ¿verdad? Y a veces uno también sin dinero y...
I just am afraid all the time because I never know if the migra is going to come and haul me away. I don't have enough money. I can't support my children in the way they need to be supported. It's just very, very difficult.
Y quiero aprender inglés también.
And I want to learn English.
Aunque sea lo más básico.
Even if it's just basic English, I want to learn how to speak English.
Is this the best way we can grow our good orchards? Is this the best way we can grow our good fruit? Fall like dry leaves and rot on your topsoil, and be called by no name except deportees.
With the New Deal of the 1930s came legislation to protect labor, but agricultural workers were excluded from those laws. It took another 50 years for the U.S. to pass the Migrant and Seasonal Agricultural Worker Protection Act in 1983, but it still falls far short of what is needed. Meanwhile, 2 million farm workers, including 100,000 children, suffer from shamefully inadequate wages, deplorable working conditions, unsafe housing, wage theft, and other illegal and unethical employment practices such as child labor. Dr. Lopez is an advocate for overhauling the agricultural laws affecting farm workers. She works with elected officials to make policy changes that improve farm workers' lives.
As far as what I would like to see with farm workers, number one, I would like to see their work valued. Right now, the way they are treated and the fact that they live in such abysmal poverty with virtually no rights, it's very clear that their contribution to this nation, to this society, is not valued. And yet, without them, we would not have a food source. And without farm workers, we would not have the $44.7 billion agricultural industry we have in the state that is the source of most of the nuts, vegetables, and fruits for the entire country. So that would be number one, that they're valued. Number two would be comprehensive immigration reform. Now, Obama's temporary visa system is of great concern to me for the following reason. I think it's on the right track. I'm glad he's at least bringing the subject up. That's at least a step in the right direction. However, the fact that it's temporary and not an amnesty like we had in 1986 with the IRCA, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, I think is very dangerous for undocumented people because they're going to have to turn in all their information to get this temporary visa. Now, if somebody gets in office that is not happy with undocumented immigrants, they'll have all that information and potentially they'll be able to knock on the door and just throw everybody out. They are holding up the entire agricultural industry. Why do they have to live in fear? I think it's unconscionable. The third thing would be a living wage. They all live in poverty, horrible, horrible poverty. And then finally, a contract. They need to sign a contract with the grower. And right now they have no contracts. So wage theft is common. Right now we're working on getting rid of the 50-mile regulation that governs the state's migrant camps. So we are meeting with personnel at the Housing and Community Development Department in Sacramento about getting rid of this regulation. And for people who are not familiar with this, if you sign up to live in one of the 24 migrant camps during the growing season, then you sign a contract that says you will move with your family at least 50 miles away as soon as the camp closes, which is usually at the end of November when the growing season stops. So the children go to at least two schools in a year. So their education is completely disrupted.
California, Arizona, I made all your crops. But it's north up to Oregon to harvest your hops. Dig the beets from the ground, pick the grapes from your vines to set on your table, your light sparkling white.
Visit Ann Aurelia Lopez's Center for Farmworker Families on the web at farmworkerfamily.org and sign up for a farmworker reality tour. Check out the video and featured articles about this topic at womenrisingradio.com. And that's it for this Women's Desk edition of Making Contact, produced by the Women Rising Radio Project. Special thanks to Ann Lopez and the Center for Farmworker Families, Bruce Neuberger and Farmworker Justice, Eileen Jacobs and California Rural Legal Assistance, Rowan Morgarity, and Nora Clow. Music courtesy of Joan Baez, Lila Downs, and Los Folcloristas. The program's producer is Lynn Feinerman. Our audio mix master is Antonio Ortiz, and I'm your host, Sandina Robbins. Thanks for listening.